share our stories when we can, and just even mentioning it to people, I think little by little, the more we talk about it, a little the more we heal as family members. And I'm primarily speaking today from a family member's perspective, okay, from a parenting perspective. And what I have found, and the reason I sort of have this focus, is finding strength to raise your child, is that there are a lot of resources out there for kids and behavioral programs and, you know, all sorts of techniques. And that's absolutely critical that if you're a parent of a child who has social, emotional, or behavior challenges, that you're immersing yourself in that research and finding out all you can about techniques and taking classes, and all those things are a huge help. The other thing, though, that I found as a parent going through this, and I'll tell you a little bit more about myself in a minute, but that just keeping hope as a parent and keeping strength as a parent is a huge battle that kind of gets overlooked, because when you go to see doctors about your child, they're going to deal with what you need to do to help your child, and that's great. They may check in with you for 1 second, you know, but you don't, there's just not a whole lot of people that are able to help you through it. And spiritually, it's a really big issue. There may be, you know, you could go to a counselor, and there's some things that a counselor might tell you about dealing with your own grief and so on, and that's really helpful. But I just found that I really needed that spiritual perspective, and I couldn't really find much anywhere. So I began this ministry when my child was over, and at the end I'll show you, but I wrote the book here about, I wrote a book about this that was the book that I wish I could have read 20 years ago that would have helped me. So that's just the niche I'm trying to fill here. Okay, God, thanks. This is my other daughter over here. This is Madeline, and this is Katie, and they're my helpers today. So, all right, so you guys introduced yourself, which was really good, and so I kind of know why most of you are here. I'll just tell you quickly, so I have a background, a doctor of public health and preventive care, but what I'm talking about today, and I have some background in psychology also, but what I'm talking to you about today is primarily what I learned from these two beautiful girls here, and just all they taught me through this process. So here they are. Oh, go back. So I guess I really don't need this picture, but I had a plan for it, so as much as possible, I continue with my plans, although, as you realize, raising these kids, that doesn't work often. But so you've met my girls, and I just was going to tell you, so you know that Katie was diagnosed with high-functioning autism when she was little, and Madeline has some chronic fatigue and health issues, and then that has gotten exacerbated by some anxiety and depression, kind of related to that whole thing. How do you deal with being in high school and wanting to do all those things you thought you could do but aren't able to do? So I've kind of had some different perspectives on this. All right. So we're going to start by talking about the effects of these challenges on the family. I'm going to give you some insights for parents looking for strength and some practical ways congregations can help. And I will try to leave some time in at the end for those of you who are in a little bit different circumstances and need some different questions answered. Okay, or I'll try to weave it in if I think about it. Thanks, Madeline. All right, I'm going to start by telling you about a journey, because our challenge as parents is we're embarking on this really uncertain journey. We kind of think we know what to expect when we come into parenthood a little bit, and all children, whether they have, you know, particular challenges or not special challenges, you know, they all kind of flip us upside down, I think, from time to time, and that turns out to be a good thing. But especially parenting a child with special needs can really, it's really an uncertain journey. This is actually my family. We are on a hovercraft, and I know I used to always think of hovercrafts as being like the Jetsons, where you know, like right now, when I watched the Jetsons in the 70s, by about now, we should have had those hovercrafts that can fly us around, but we don't. This is the closest thing we have. So this is a hovercraft, and it just has air in kind of the skirt of the boat, and so it keeps you off the rocks. And this gentleman over here is my wonderful husband. And he was, might I just say, a little bit obsessed with hovercrafts for a while. He lived near the Sacramento River, and he really wanted to be able to navigate that, which was fine. So he got this boat, and he practiced with his friends and made sure he knew how to run it before he took his precious family out there, made sure he, you know, knew what the ins and outs were. But it's a little bit different. It's kind of like riding in a hovercraft is kind of like a hockey puck, you know, on an air table where you kind of glide on top of the water. So we were excited. This was Thanksgiving Day. We got in the boat. Beautiful day. Rode around, got in the boat across the river, going kind of to the other side. And, of course, it was a little scary because it's really different. You've got this loud band behind you. But being the good mother that I am, I'm like, yay, this is great, you know, even though I'm a little anxious about it. But the kids are in there, so I'm, you know, putting on my best mom face. We're having an adventure, you know. Brian kind of looked at me, and he knows that, you know, he knows that face. And so, you know, okay, it's a little bit fast, and it's really, really loud, and he's thinking, this is probably too loud for Katie because she had some sensitive in her ear. So he slows down a little bit just to kind of make it a little bit more peaceful ride because he's such a good dad. So as we do that, he kind of slows down, and we are gliding over to the side of the river, and the trees, there's beautiful oak trees hanging over, and it's shady, and we're just like, this is a moment. You know, this is a beautiful moment. Next thing I know, one of those beautiful oak trees catches in the back of the hovercraft, in the fan, stops the boat, flips us over. So we had been in this boat for probably, I don't know, 45 seconds, I don't know, a minute and a half at the very most, we've been in this boat. And we are immediately flipped over into this water, the Sacramento River, which is 50 degrees all year round. So there we are in this boat. And of course, as it's flipping over, we're trying to, I am trying to save the children, you know, by holding the boat up so the boat doesn't crash down on the top of them. I'm sure Brian was doing the same thing. And, but there we were, set in this middle of this freezing river. Not what we expected, traumatic for the moment. We were okay, it wasn't that deep. But this little one was about 7 years old and skinny, as little girls are sometimes when they're 7 years old, skinny little thing, just shivering, you know. And it's starting to get dusk. And so anyway, I'm going to finish that story later. But this is kind of what happens to us, I think, with special needs parenting, is we have this idea of what it's going to look like. And yes, there might be some challenges. Yes, there might be some scary moments. But we have a pretty good idea because we've seen it all around us. We've seen parenting all around us. And kids grew up in the church. And we are just thrown completely for a loop. Okay? Go ahead now. So... And I'm just talking a little bit about this, not to say, oh, poor, pitiful parents, but I want those of you to know, especially who are not parents, what this is like for parents who have kids with autism or anxiety or depression or bipolar or just some behavior problems that we don't understand or attention deficit or whatever it might be. And also just to give those of you who do have those challenges, to give you some validation that you are normal for going through these sorts of feelings and to have this kind of stuff going on. Because I remember being in the middle of it thinking, I can't be the only one. Well, thinking maybe I was the only one. Because you look around at people, and they're not outwardly panicking, right? When you see them with their kids, they've got their little feet under the water, and they're paddling like heck. But the top of them, they might look pretty calm and cool. But underneath, you don't always know what's going on underneath, okay? So we know that families go through a serious trauma, okay? Especially if they have a child with aggression, self-injury, communication challenges, and autism. Now, I knew this without citing the research, but I just thought I'd throw it out here because there is research on this now, okay? And we know that trauma, actually when they did a study on veterans or people that were actually in the Iraq war, okay, and who were dealing with trauma in and out, not knowing when things were going to happen. You know, some days were smooth sailing and some days were completely frightening and scary. That there's certain chemicals released. We have physiological responses, okay? People have that and they've done measure that. Well, kids raising children with autism have those same, or parents raising children with autism have those same physiological responses, okay? Mm-hmm. Which is that, and tell me those of you who have a child or a grandchild, do you feel that hypervigilance? I've got to be there every second and watching what's happening because either they're in therapy and I've got to make sure they're doing therapy all the time because I need to be making progress, or if I'm not watching, somebody's going to get hurt or they might hurt themselves or whatever that is. So it's this constant ongoing stress that really, really wears, okay? Grief, of course, anxiety and depression is much higher in these families. We go through a frantic search for help, most of us. And then the cycle can repeat itself in different stages of development. Go ahead. Okay, some of the reasons is that we lose the child that we expected, not that we don't. I mean, we love our child unconditionally. We love them just the way they are. And I remember thinking, this is the most beautiful little girl in the world, and I need to fix, you know what I mean? I need to fix whatever's going on, because I would do anything for her. And that's the beautiful part of parenting, but it's also, you know, it's the best of times and the worst of times. It also crushes us because our hearts are so invested. All right, so we have to adjust to a new normal situation, which may not be all bad, but for a while it can be bad, especially if you're experiencing those behavior problems, okay? Spiritual questions are crises. Those of you that work in the church, there's a lot of spiritual questions that can come up during this time, especially if you're just having a child that is having so much trouble, you can't see anything good coming from it at the moment. You know, everywhere they go, every step they take seems to cause some problem, or other people are causing problems because they don't understand, okay? And I remember thinking at the time, what good can come from autism? I just remember thinking, if a child wants to socialize and wants to engage, but it's not working, and God made us as social beings, what good can come from this? And I'm just being honest here. I went through a period where I just thought, I don't get it. No, I just don't get it. Okay, now I see the good that has come from this. But you don't always see it. All right. Social rejection and isolation, that happens to the child oftentimes, but it also happens to the family. Because you're not invited on the neighborhood camping trip that everybody goes on. Not that people don't like you, but they know that if your child comes, there might be some altercations, there might be some problems, and so it just is easier for families to be left out, okay? There might be things that you'd like to go to, but you can't take your child because you know it's just going to be overwhelming, you're not going to be able to enjoy yourselves because there's so much doing, okay? So a lot of isolation can result if we're not really careful about it. And potential violence in the home. And then you cannot do what I already mentioned. You can't do family things that you always thought you were going to do. Our family didn't go camping. We always kind of wanted to go camping, but all four of us, in the height of the times that we were having trouble, all four of us in a small tent or a small trailer, surrounded by people that could hear everything that happened, you know, we just were not brave enough to really do that because It was embarrassing to have to solve problems. You feel like you got to apologize to people. You feel like they don't understand. They feel like maybe it's your fault. Why don't those parents take care of those kids? You know, why don't they just give them a good swift kick in the behind and that would take care of everything? So it puts you in a really difficult situation. Alrighty. This is just a quick, just throwing out, again, there are some studies just pointing out that a fair percentage of them, and it depends on which measure you're looking at here, but, and this is studied specifically on mental illness, but that family members feel shunned by friends and neighbors, or a good portion of them blamed, okay, on the verge of personal breakdown. And I can say I was at that point at some point. I developed a really chronic fatigue because of my, I think, hypervigilance in the early years of working with my child. And of course, that probably, I'm going to talk to you today to maybe prevent some of that. I don't think I had to be so hypervigilant. But I felt like this was on me, this was my thing that I needed to work on, that I needed to fix, okay? I didn't rely on God as much as I probably could, as I could have, should have. Marriages can be severely stressed, and then other children in the family can receive less care, which can cause trouble sometimes later on. And careers and jobs are affected. Many people quit their jobs. I didn't have a career that I thought I might have, which was fine, because God provided some other really great paths for me. But I grieved that for a while, too. Okay? That's a lot of grief. All right. Okay, and I'm just going to touch on this quickly, because some of them I've already touched on. But, you know, I talked about those physiological measures. So these are some of the physiological measures that we see in recent studies, okay, those where it says altered cortisol response, reduced immune function, and telomere shortening. Mm-hmm. Telomeres are actually the little caps on the ends of the DNA that preserve our cells and keep us going. So we know that there are higher rates. Generally, if you've got telomere shortening, that means you're going to have higher rates of cancer in those people, higher rates of illness. And so there is effects on parents as well as the kids. Okay. A whole family. All right, so this is why you came here, right? In spite of the trauma, okay, is there a way to find treasures on the journey? And that's what I'm going to spend some time talking about today. So this is the treasure I think we tend to seek as families. Is that true?
Sure.
You know, when we get married and we have children or have grandchildren, we're kind of looking for this happily ever after, whatever that might be. We just feel in our core, right? That's what we'd like. Okay, go ahead. So I'm going to finish that hovercraft story, and I just love this picture. I just threw it up here because I think it's darling. But finding the treasure requires that we get back in the boat, okay, and continue that journey. So then I go back to where my family was on the side of the river in the hovercraft, okay, standing on the side of the river. And I can tell you, I did not want to get back in that boat, okay, to get back to the other side. And Brian went out there and he found a fisherman. God provided a fisherman out there. They turned the boat over. They bailed all the water out. And they're like, Brian's like, okay, we've got to get back in. We've got to get, you know, back around. We were on the side of this island. We had to get back around the island to the other side. And I looked at every other way we could possibly get away from there. I'm like, really? Maybe we could just walk. Maybe we could wait for another boat. I really looked at walking up the side of the hill, on the side of the river there. Because I knew if we walked far enough, we would get to the road, and I could find someone to help us, or we could walk back to our starting point from the road. So I was seriously considering that. I think I mentioned that to Brian. And I looked behind me, though, and the hillside was covered with poison oak. Mm-hmm. And she is very, very allergic to poison oak. So that was just not an option. But I was like, shoot, there's got to be another option. But this just cracks me up, because if this little kitty can get back in the boat, I don't know. You know, cats are not really water animals, but there he is, and I just love him. Anyway, so I knew that I'm going to get back in that boat and continue that journey. Go ahead. God started that journey. Okay, he starts our journey, especially with parents. We want to run away from it sometimes. We get to moments where I remember getting in my car a couple of times in this process and thinking, you know, going out of town to an appointment or something, thinking, you know, I wouldn't really have to turn back and go home. I could just sort of keep driving. Now, not seriously, I never really considered just leaving my family, but the thought passed in my mind that, you know what, it's really relaxing here driving down the road by myself, okay? And I don't know if you families have felt that way sometimes, but it's normal if you do, to feel like you wish there was a way out, because it can be really a pressure cooker, okay? Not that I'm suggesting that you do that, because that's not the right thing to do, but you can feel that way and move past that, and it's normal. All right. When we got back in the boat, I do need to tell you, go back. I've got to finish one more thing in that story. So when we got back in the boat, it was scary. And I remember sitting in that boat, and Madeline told me afterwards she was singing Amazing Grace, because that was her favorite song as a seven-year-old, which everybody thinks is a crack up. But she was singing Amazing Grace to herself to calm herself down, and I was praying, God, just please don't let me die this way. This is a stupid way to die. And I was crying or taking us in here. And clearly we didn't. But we were scared. We made it back. And clearly we were fine. So he didn't terminate us that way. All right. So coping in the boat. And there's way more than four steps here. But what I can cover in this short period of time, this is what I felt like I'd cover in the short period of time. So we're going to talk a little bit about grieving patiently, what that means here, capturing hope, trusting God to direct the outcome, and transforming our thoughts. All right, we'll go on. All right, so I think I talked a little bit about on how grief can repeat itself. These are the typical stages of grief that pretty characteristically people go through, okay, here on the left. And they may not go through them exactly in that order, but usually in some sort of that order there, okay? And then what you will find is that, again, a characteristic of the grief is that it repeats itself. So you think you've gone through the shock or the denial, possibly if you ever went through that phase. You've gone through some of the sadness, some of the depression. I know I entered a period of depression for about 3 months after Katie was diagnosed, and there was not a lot of help around. This was 20 years ago. There's not a lot of help for autism, so I had to figure it out myself a lot. And then you may get to the point, over time, you accept it more, and life, you know, gets good and you learn to advocate and you learn to make action on behalf of your child. But I'll tell you, something can happen and it immediately can take you back to anxiety or depression or grieving again. Just 2 days ago, and I'm pretty good now. I've been in advocacy and action for a long time. Just 2 days ago, there were some posts on Facebook, and I won't go into the details what they were, but it took me, there I was crying in front of my computer 2 days ago. And I was, again, I kind of shocked myself whenever I do that, but then I realized, okay, I think God was preparing me. I think God was letting me know just to get back in touch to where some of you are, where something can put you probably into tears in a moment's notice, okay? And just reminding me how difficult it can be when you're in the middle of some of the difficulty. It's important to remember that family members grieve at different rates. So you may be in the advocacy or action phase, and somebody else in your family may still be in denial, or a family member, or maybe teachers. Okay, and there, you know, you may, it may be somebody at the church who thinks, that's, I don't really think that's what's going on. I think this child just has behavior problems because you're not consistent enough. Okay, that can be really, really painful for parents. And again, if it's someone who loves you, it probably just means that they're in a different phase of grief. And it doesn't look like grief to you because they're maybe not even accepting it right now, but they just may not be able, or they just can't see it right now. So just to remember, it'll save you a lot of pain if you can be patient with the way and the stage of others grieving. Okay, grief will come up in the child with special needs. Some of you have already experienced that because they're older, they're 15. But when you have little ones, I think you forget, especially if you have a little one that has multiple special needs or autism, or something that you really have to do a lot of work with to help give them a lot of therapy and help them grow. I think sometimes a lot of the things that we see when they're young especially are attributed to the disability, like autism. So a lot of the behaviors might see you can attribute them directly to autism. As kids get older, though, you know, we're people, right? Our kids with challenges are people. And so they grieve because they're sad. It's not always related to the disability. They grieve because they're going through the same thing you may have gone through, that they're facing some challenges or some making some realizations or some things they'd like to do that are harder for them to do. And so it's just important to remember that in our kids, that as hard as it is on us as parents and as much grief and aggravation that we have over some of the issues, if we've got real behavior problems, that it's harder for them, okay, because they're experiencing all that stuff that we're seeing outward. They're experiencing that inside before you see it. Okay. All right. Let's go on. So that whole grief process, I touch on it just because it's important to go through that process and honor it and be okay with it, however long it takes you. And you might need to get help with that. All right. The role of values and beliefs in grieving is really important. And this is where I learned. Okay, I've been a Christian for many years. I thought I had faith. I was going to Bible study regularly. I was working on it. I did not realize until I got to this point where my dreams and expectations for my family were sort of shattered for a while. I did not realize how earthbound I was. And I don't want to say worldly, because I don't think I was worldly. But I don't think many of us realize how earthbound we are, that our dreams and our expectations have to do with things that are on earth. My child's going to school and they're doing well. Awesome. Okay? Whatever it might be. My child's graduating from college. Awesome. And you have these things that you hope for your children, and you hope spiritual things for your children too. But sometimes I think we don't realize how earthbound we are. Until they're not meeting those needs. So it's a blessing. We can become kingdom-minded. You get reminded to be kingdom-minded quickly in this process. Okay. Success and normality. This is another thing that trips up a lot of families and other people watching us. Okay. What does success mean in the world? What does normal mean in the world? normal is one of those terms that we really don't have a good definition for, but we all have an idea in our mind of what maybe that looks like to us or seems to us, even if it's not very valid. Okay, we all do. But then you look again in what God would. I looked back as I was working through this and writing my book and thinking, I wrote the book after I went through years of struggling with this stuff in my head, trying to figure it out. Okay. What does God think about this? How does God work? Does God care if my child is on the honor roll? No, I don't think so. Does God care about these different things? I mean, he can use it, but he can do whatever he wants, right? So I look back, though, at some of the characters that God worked through powerfully. And, think about John the Baptist, who said in the Bible, only second to Christ, the greatest man in the world, only second to Christ, right? Is John the Baptist? Okay, John the Baptist wandered in the wilderness, eating locusts and wild honey, okay? Girls, thank you for not doing that. Okay, so that was not normal or successful in the eyes of the world. That was, even back then, that was not typical. God used so many atypical circumstances. Mary got pregnant. That was not a normal or a successful or a good thing to do, to be pregnant out of wedlock, okay? God used that. He planned it that way, all right? Just so many characters in the Bible have really, I want you to go back and think about this week, of the different things that happened on that. God used, and he used those people powerfully, okay? So God can work our circumstances for good. Even though we get so wrapped up in our minds we don't think so, God can use it and will use it, I believe, for good. Rejection and isolation. A lot of families that I talked about earlier worked into that. Again, I think what happens a lot with that, too, is godly versus worldly shame, okay? So it's okay to be temporarily shamed when you sin and you know you sinned, and it's okay to be, it's good, to be ashamed of what you did and to repent and turn the other direction, okay? What I call worldly shame here is when the world puts the stigma or the shame upon you because you feel it when you go into a room because your child has a mental illness and people just say that's crazy, that person's crazy or whatever, and they don't understand it, they don't get it. And as parents, even though we know this is nothing to be ashamed of, sometimes we take it on. We take those feelings on without even knowing it. And we become ashamed of just situations because we just don't want to be seen outside of normal, okay? That's not what God wants us to do, okay? That's not shame, that's of the world, that's Satan working at us there, and so we need to keep away of that kind of shame if you ask me about that. Alrighty. These are some things to ask questions to ask yourself as you grieve. Not what do my neighbors think about this? What do my parents or my in-laws or whatever, what do they think about this? What does God think about this? Did I wake you up, Clorian, when I said in-laws? How might God use this situation to his glory? How might he use this to his glory? These are things you've got to stay focused on if you don't want to get into a pit, okay? How might I grow and learn through this situation? What does God have this in this for me? This may not be about my kids. This may be about me and what he wants to do with me, or with my church, or with whatever. How and why has God given me the opportunity to experience this? Now, I'm not living in a fantasy land here. I know that when your child is hitting another child, or he is throwing a temper tantrum on the floor that's lasting 30 minutes, or he's hitting you in the face, or whatever is going on, you have to lock yourself in the bedroom because you're afraid that your older child is going to hurt you because he's in a rage and it just is a pain he's going through. Okay, this does not appear to be an opportunity. Okay, but I'm telling you, it is an opportunity. Okay, and it's an opportunity to grow in imaginable ways. It's an opportunity to comfort a soul that's and stand beside this little person. Sorry, that's really, really struggling. Okay, it's a really, really good work. And so I just, as much as you can look at this as an opportunity, I know there's a quote out there that says, opportunities are often missed because they come disguised as hard work. Okay? And this process of parenting and or teaching kids with challenges is hard, hard work. I don't think there's probably anything much more difficult because it gets especially I think when it's your child, because it just gets down deep, deep in your soul. And you can just hardly stand for this person to be so miserable, because it makes you so miserable as a parent. You want them so much to be happy, okay? But God works. He loves it when he can get down deep into your soul and deep into your heart, because that's where he changes you, okay? That's where big things happen. And that's where big things happen in biblical characters too, right? You look at that? Okay. So happily ever after, the second thing I want to talk about, what time do I have to do, like 2:15? Is that about right? Okay. Requires hope. So the second thing I wrote up there that I wanted you to work on is capturing hope. Okay. Now, I dwelt on hope for a while, because I was having a difficult situation with my kids, and they were little. I mean, they were like, Katie was 2, Madeline was like a newborn. I had moved to Kentucky to this place. We knew nobody. We moved to Kentucky in the middle of the winter, knew nobody. Katie was just showing some signs that I knew something wasn't working quite right. Madeline was a whiny little newborn, I have to say. She cried a lot. I was super stressed out. My mom came out to visit one time, and I was telling her, Mom, I just don't think I can do this. I just was overwhelmed, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't have friends. Brian was a new job. He was working about 12 hours a day, driving out of town to work. I just said, Mom, I don't think I can do this. And, of course, my mom's very calm, very even-keeled person, but you know, when she gets serious, she said, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And then she said, Karen, she said, don't you have any hope? Don't you have any hope? And I remember thinking that and thinking, okay, first of all, what is hope? Is it just some sort of wishful thinking that things are going to be okay, even though all the evidence shows me that things are not okay? Okay? Really? Really, what is this? And so it sent me on a bit of a journey, because I didn't have hope. I really didn't. Go ahead. So I looked up hope. So hope, a biblical definition of hope, and in Webster's, okay? But is trust or desire, that's directly out of Webster's, accompanied by an expectation of fulfillment, okay? So hoping is not the same as wishing. Wishing is having some blind, desire for something, but without really, you know, like, I wish I would win the lottery, but it's not really likely that that's going to happen, okay? Hoping is having an expectation of fulfillment, so very, very different, okay? So if we are having trouble with hope, you need to ask yourself, and these are not questions I can fix for you or you can fix for yourself overnight, but in whom or what do I truly put my confidence? Okay? Am I putting my confidence in the teachers at the school that are working in the classroom? Because there's some really good teachers out there, but they're not the end all and be all. Okay, they can really help you on your journey. Or is it with the doctors that are providing the therapies or giving the medication? Because I got to tell you, they're gonna fail you at some point. Wonderful, wonderful people. I'm just saying. Okay, I set up a whole program when my daughter was about 10 for social emotional training for kids with autism. I started this whole program from the ground up when she was about 10. I was so excited, and I set it up for children in the community. And it's this great program. Still, it's going now and serves about 100 kids every year. Are served in this program at our school, social emotional training in the summer. But I had it all set up, and I was doing it for the families that I knew, but primarily I was doing it for my daughter, because she needed that, and I knew she needed this situation, and there were no great programs set up. So I set this one up, and Katie went the first couple weeks, and what did you think about that program? She hated it.
I don't know.
She was stressed out. It's not that, you know what I mean? She was stressed out. She was not ready for whatever was going on there. And it was, I tried my very best to keep her in there. We tried to make modifications, as you do with any child in a program like that, because it's for the kids with autism. So you're going to make all sorts of accommodations to make it work. It didn't work. After about a month, we had to pull her out of the program. So there I was, going to work every day, leading this program that was supposed to be for my child and for the other kids, but my child was at home, doing like some daycare stuff where all these other kids were getting enriched. So I couldn't put confidence in myself and my program. I mean, in my mind, that was going to be what was help. And it did help, eventually. The next year, she went back, and she did well. And it was helpful to her, I think. But what are you putting your confidence? Because I was pretty disappointed when that happened, I have to tell you. Because I was putting my confidence in my plan, my good plan. Okay, is it or he trustworthy? Sometimes it depends on what God is trustworthy, but Beth, please. Does God really care about me and my child? I think that's another question that you have to really dig deep and look at the scriptures and see what that says and how you might have evidence of that. Because sometimes it seems like he must not care this much, or this problem wouldn't keep continuing. It ought to lessen up by now. Sometimes it'll go for long periods of time. I do believe our kids do go through cycles, and they will go through periods where they do better and do worse, but sometimes it can be a long time. Okay. But that doesn't mean, I heard another definition of hope. Hope is knowing in the darkness what you've seen in the light, or believing in the darkness what you've seen in the light. So you know that God is good. You've known God to do good things in your lives and in other people's lives. When you were in the darkness and you can't see that, you look back and you remember when he did come through and how you saw that, okay, in other people. All right, capturing hope. Just some ways of looking at this. Is it a God-given personality? And then there are some people in the world that are just, right, they see the world rosy. They're Pollyannas. Are you pointing at Corinne?
No, you're okay.
They just see the world as rosy and everything's going to be okay. Bad things might happen in the world, but they're not going to happen to me, right? It's going to work out for me. And that's great. That's fine. Okay? And that could be faith. It could just be a gift of faith. I don't know. Okay? But we definitely know, certainly, that God gives us the gift of faith, and there's some scriptures to look at again. We need to remember, again, that faith is the power to receive what we hope for. Okay? Faith is the power. It's not therapy is the power. It's not being the perfect parent is the power to receive what we hope for. Okay? Faith is the power. Whew, that was hard for me to get because I am a really can-do, if there's a problem, I want to solve it kind of a person. To let it go, okay? Big deal. But really improved my health a lot when I could do that. And I think faith allows us to see things as God might view them. Okay? We know that the real world, in Hebrews it talks about how earth is just a shadow. The good things we see on earth are but a shadow of a, I'm losing it, of a copy of a shadow, a copy of a shadow of the good things in heaven. Okay, yeah. So the good things we see on earth are a copy of what my good things mean, or and a copy of a shadow. So not a great image, right? We just get a little thing, we just get a little feel of what it might be like, okay? But heaven is the real world, right? Okay, that's the world that continues forever and ever. That's the eternal world. So if we can start to see things through God's eyes and how he might be seeing this, we're going to do a whole lot better. All right. And then, so that's a gift of faith. And then the third way he works faith through us is through suffering. And I had to do it through that way. Hopefully some of you just get right on that bandwagon and just sail this through, okay? I feel like I had to do it through suffering. Go ahead. But that's a valid way to learn hope. It's a valid way. Okay, the scriptures tell us that. Romans 5:3-4. We also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. Okay? So it just might take a little longer for some of us. Okay, Madeline, next one. So through suffering, and of course, and the influence of the Holy Spirit, because if we're going through suffering without the Holy Spirit, we can become bitter and angry. Okay? We can learn to believe what God says. I think that's a real key to hope here. Not just believing in God, but believing what God says. And he says, do not worry. Okay, that's a command. Do not worry. I used to think that was kind of like an impractical suggestion. Really, God, how can I not worry? I mean, that's nice, but do you know my personality, you know? So believing what God says, doing what God says, so acting on that belief, okay? And that's what creates perseverance in you, and that's what will keep you going when you think you can't go on any longer, okay? So believing what he says. Go back, man, because there's something at the bottom of there. Oh, yeah, and so perseverance, and these two things are the building blocks of godly character. I just think believing what God says, the more I think about believing what God says, that's our strength right there. Okay, believing what God says. Those scriptures tell us the joy of the Lord is our strength. But believing what he says, that's where we get our joy, right? Believing what he says and calling those things as truth and living on those truths. All right. Godly character. I've got 5 minutes, my daughter says. All right, so hope doesn't disappoint us because God has poured out his love to us by the Holy Spirit, which he has given us. That's really profound. I don't have a lot of time to talk about that, but I do think the Holy Spirit enables our vision and values to become more aligned with God's. And that's what hope is about. Okay, so still, God may take us on a really wild ride. This doesn't mean, like I talked before, that you're not going to have some wild, scary times. Okay? I work with families in my own family have had kids so depressed that I was worried that they might take their life, okay, or that that was going through their mind. And there are families I know that drive to the emergency room often with a child on a suicide watch. So it can. I'm not saying this is easy, okay, and this is all peaches. I know the reality of this, okay. Can we trust God with the outcome? That's the other thing that used to scare me. Can I trust you, God, with my outcome? With the outcome? If my child does get so distressed that they become suicidal, can I trust you with that? That you've got him or her in your arms? That's the only way you can have peace when you're walking through that. I like here what God tells us to trust in the Lord, do good, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. It's just sweet. Okay, and when our lives are turned upside down, I like this picture. If you can't see it up close, but the expressions on the little bit of faces that you can see. So this boat that was coming along, these people on this wild ride, they were upside down. Their lives are upside down. And it just reminded me of C.S. Lewis in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and the children go into Narnia, and they say, they're talking to Mr. Beaver. Do you guys know this? Mm-hmm. Some of the story? They talk to Mr. Beaver, and they're hearing about Aslan. And they say, Aslan, who is the caricature for the, if some of you haven't read it, who's the, it's an allegory for Christ, Aslan, this big lion. And they're saying, well, Mr. Beaver, they're hearing about Aslan, but is he safe? Because he's a lion. That might be kind of scary. Is he safe? Mr. Beaver says, of course he isn't safe. He said, but he's good. He's really good. He's not safe, which means he will bring you into scary waters that are not safe. Scary things might happen, but he's good. He's good. So scary things can happen all the time and end up good, right? Read the Old Testament. Read the New Testament. It's okay. All right. So our job is to develop faith and trust him. God's job is to produce the outcomes. And if we can live by that, we're doing good. All right, Madeline. I think we're in our last little bit. If you're tempted, lose faith. Take captive every thought. Make it obedient under Christ. Go ahead. I'm not going to have time to go through all of these scriptures, but you can find them in your own study. You can live a blessed life. Now I'm going to talk a little bit, though. No, okay, that's good. You can live the best life with social, emotional, and behavioral challenges in your family. Children are a reward from the Lord. And I used to think that I'd be like, really? It seems like they're a worry from the Lord. Right now, it just seems like they're a worry, okay? But I realize that doesn't mean that they're just happy and they're praising you all the time and you're just, you know, everything's hunky-dory with your children all the time, okay? I think it means that they remind you how much you need God. That's why they're a blessing. They remind you how much you need God, and they remind you of God's relationship with you. That's why children are a blessing, I think. There might be some other reasons, too. But those are the best reasons. All right, go ahead, Madeline. You can handle the challenges even with your weakness and little apparent preparation. I remember thinking, and I still feel sometimes, there are certain things that, you know, we all have strengths and weaknesses, and there were certain things that I was not good at, and that I felt really stretched me, you know, out of my comfort zone in dealing with my kids. And, but then I read this. First of all, that's part of our job, okay? But God's grace is sufficient for you, for his power is made perfect in your weakness. His power is made perfect in your weakness. It's okay to have some weak areas. Not that you're not going to work on him, but it's okay. He knows that. And that's what he does is amazing things that you know you can't do in your own strength. Okay? That's where you see God. Okay. And I just cover these because these are really common things that we deal with. Do not throw away your confidence. Okay, God will take care of the details so you can focus on the basics. Yes. Let me get to the end. Sorry.
We're done.
Oh, that's it. That's totally it.
I mean, I can skip through them real quick, but...
Go. I think there's some... Well, there are some...
We're done with time, I'm saying.
Yes, but okay. Go on.
Okay. There's too many.
See, I'm still trying to control my children. I know there's too many.
There's 10 left.
What's next? Oh, yeah. Okay, you're right. There is too much. Okay. Redemption, but it's okay. Redemption is what we go through. The end result of this is redemption. And when I speak about redemption, when we think of it, we think, okay, redemption meaning we're going to go to heaven someday. We've been saved by the blood of Christ. And yes, but we're also redeemed for the moment. We're redeemed for these problems that we think are overwhelming. Now they're looking at this. Those problems that we think are overwhelming, okay, to redeem, one of the versions that I like that you don't hear all the time, or one of the definitions, is to make worthwhile, okay? To go back, man, I need to see the slide on redemption. To change for the better, to restore, that's what I was looking for, to repair, make worthwhile, to convert into something of value. So God will redeem your situations. I have no doubt about that. I don't know how he's going to do it because it's different in every family. All right, so the last few slides are just show how congregations can help. And okay, yes, I did go too long. I don't have a lot of time for questions. But I don't know if there's a class. There might be a class right here afterwards. I'm not sure. But there are some resources for you on the papers that I handed out for congregations. And there's other resources besides my book that you can look up as well. That was on the slides there. But I just wrote this for parents, and it can be used. This resource can be used in a support group for parents. It's biblical. It's faith-based. It's got questions in every chapter, so parents can read the questions, answer them at home, and then discuss them in a group. And because parents get so much strength for one another in listening and knowing that other people share their issues. So that's what I created, and there's some other really good resources on there. And
can it be used like a study at a church?
It can be used at church. My first impression, my first goal when I wrote it was just for parents to read at home. But I included questions along the way for parents to reflect upon. And if you hand it out, you know, to say 10 families, the families just read one chapter each week, answer the questions either in their mind or write it down. It's written right through there. It's like a workbook style. And then you can get together and go through this in about 10 weeks and have a discussion. And it can be led by just one of the group members. And you can take turns. You don't need to have special training to read through it. It's just your reflections and your growth and how God is working in your life, provisions that he's provided, because we need to be reminded when he does provide. So, and they're for sale in the bookstore. And I also have some, if you want one signed, I can get one for you too. So, are there any questions quickly? And I can talk to you afterwards if you don't have time. Yes.
Are you going to have this one? Will this be available to purchase the PowerPoint?
You know what? I can put it on my website. So you have on this piece of paper my website. So I will make sure, I don't have it on there now, but within a week or so after I get back, I'll put it on my website so you can access it. Okay? And my email's on here. So if any of you need me to pray for you, have a special need, I am more than healthy. That's happy to talk to you. So just email me, and I'll call you back or email you back. Or whatever, okay?